Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free, or there'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast. On Wednesday, Celtic play Slovan Bratislava to start off our Champions League campaign. So we're going to have a podcast. Andrew and St. Anthony both sitting here as if it's it's Parky Theron. So talking to that, actually, have you watched any of the Parkies on a Saturday night?
Yes.
On BBC4?
By the way, they live up to it. People with real genuine articles.
And exceptionally earnest. You wouldn't compare that now to a chat show now where it's come on and just try to be a comedian for 5 minutes.
Well, Lord McCall was like, it's almost like some kind of therapy session.
And I know it's you just wouldn't get.
He was a master of his trade, though. When you talk about interviewers, he's so far ahead of
him. I know.
But anyway, so yes, we've got, it was me that directed it. We've got Slovan Bratislava on Wednesday, starting off the Champions League. So, Andrew, you've made a big point. We've never won our opening Champions League campaign. So
and the fates conspired against Celtic for that one, because if you remember 2001, they were supposed to start their first Champions League campaign the night after September the 11th against Rosenborg, and then there was no flight, like no teams could fly, so then it became, I think it was the second or third game, it shifted down the kind of order, because they then eventually won that. It was a really streaky 1-0 win, but they won that. But they've not really been that close to doing it otherwise.
Look, see, looking back, and this is going to sound very crass, but I remember being hugely disappointed when that game got called off, to the point of being really annoyed. And you know, what happened the day before 9/11, it was catastrophic, and you know, even looking back now, it's a terrible thing. But it goes to show how, as football fans, you're living in your own wee bubble.
You're
not really caring much what happens in other parts of the world, in New York or whatever it is. I just remember feeling quite cheated. It's because it was my first time.
Yeah.
I mean, even the qualifying games against Ajax were stress fest, because for nine seasons we'd watched the television and we heard the Champions League theme. Rangers had played quite a few seasons, and we were desperate to get involved in that and see that first game when it got cancelled. I just remember feeling absolutely devastated.
Yeah, it just felt felt hollow, didn't it?
And then we were cheated by Juventus.
And then so when I say it wasn't close, and that's maybe unfair, because it was also the Bayern Munich, if you remember. I think Hedman had a few, you know. That was a first, that was a starting, that was a first night, wasn't it?
No, it was 2003.
But no, I'm saying, but that was
the first, first game of the
campaign.
The section.
I always felt a bit sorry. I thought Hedman got unfairly criticised. If you watched it behind the goal, the ball is coming straight for him. And then when it's about, from about 30 yards, and then when the ball's about where you are, and I'm Hedman, it suddenly swerves like that.
Right.
So he's ready to catch it here, and then all of a sudden the ball goes there.
But you're part of the goalkeeper's doing
that. No, but if you watch it behind the goal, that's what it does. It's coming in a straight line to about there, and then the last second it just swerves, and he does that, so it's not directly behind him, and sort of does a Craig Gordon from Saturday.
That was terrible.
So we've got Slovan Bratislava, and Ross Hall couldn't make it tonight, so he's done a wee scouting report for us on Slovan Bratislava. I didn't watch it. My brother watched. I think they were in the final qualifying game was against Michelin. And Michelin were going through. Until the right at the very last minute.
It was a great game, because the BBC have now got highlights again, so it was really enjoyable watching the qualifiers. You could see it all on the BBC. And something, people like me have only got council telly, you know, it's like, this is a joy.
So, I actually never thought it would get on the BBC. Because of the requirement to have all the brought to you by police station and all that stuff.
Yes, it's quite odd. It was quite an odd set of programmes, but there were some great qualifiers. And that was one of the real topsy-turvy ones. My memory is, was it Tollich that he scored twice?
Yeah, so they got through. So I'll read Ross's report. They had 5 wins so far this season. They're currently first in the domestic table. 5 wins, 1 loss, 15 points. 11 goals scored, 8 conceded.
I mean, that's in one game.
Five
and one. Yeah. Last season, they won the league with 73 points in 32 games, and a goal difference of plus 45. Scored 76, conceded 31. So, I mean, I'm just reading into this. I've never watched them, but that implies to me that they are prone to losing goals.
They're prone to losing goals because I think they're a very front foot team. It's like they're a kind of an Ange style team.
Yep.
They'll know, what's the old cricket phrase? They'll know die wonder.
Yeah. So they, against Midtjylland, over the 2 legs, they had 26 attempts on goals. So that goes with what you said. So from 26 attempts over the 2 legs, 8 were classed as big chances and they scored 4 goals.
Yeah.
So, notable players, average age of the team. So this is one of the things that you mentioned. Average age of the team's 30.
Yeah. Must be one of the oldest teams that are in this league format. Now, we don't need league group. We say just league format, don't we? The Champions League's actually a league.
Yeah, your man Vice, it was the Rangers player, he's 35 now, I believe.
Yeah.
So obviously he's pushing the average up higher. But to be honest, he's the only one I've heard.
But we've got, I think our average age is something like 26.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we've got Schmeichel, who's also similar age, is pushing it up. So,
according to you, he's pushing up the average poundage of the players.
Well, do you not think
he's like got a generous gift?
He does. Do you know what I think it is that compounds it? He's not tucking his top in, which is the older gentleman's way of hiding their pot belly. I'll just not tuck my top in; it'll just hang there. I think that's what compounds the concept.
Dart players, do you remember dart players? They never tuck
their tops in. So we're up against Michelin. So what do you think? What do you make of the new format? Do you like it?
Yeah, on the face of it, I like it because I think it gives you more variety in terms of the opposition that you're playing. And I also think as well it'll help us because, for example, when you play Paris Saint-Germain at home in the first game and you get beat 5-0, there's a bit of trepidation there. Like in Paris, the second game in Paris.
But it wasn't misplaced, was it?
It wasn't misplaced. So I think you're taking that element away a wee bit as well. But what really, when the draw was made, I was at a meeting and I actually forgot about it and you'd sent me a text to the teams on it. And I'm looking through the teams, I'm going, that can't be right. There's no Barcelona, there's no Liverpool, there's no Bayern Munich, there's no Real Madrid. Who's the top one teams in there? And you know, if you could have handpicked an interesting group,
yes.
I think that would have been it. So this is a real opportunity for us because I look at Slovan Bratislava, and I hope I'm not tempting fate here, but I would equate them as being a decent Europa League team because we have played in the Champions League, which you said, 13 occasions.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the 13th
occasion. They haven't played in it yet. So even in terms of experience and playing in front of big crowds and even that Champions League team when it starts at the beginning and the crowd get going, they've not experienced that yet. That has to be an advantage for them.
It has to be. I worked it out. This is Celtic's most winnable Champions League game since Aalborg at home in 2008. And maybe we shouldn't think about the fact that Celtic didn't win that night. Barry Robson missed the penalty. Yeah. If you remember, it was incredibly frustrating, exasperating evening in that one. If you remember that,
they weren't a good team either.
They weren't a good team.
But
they also beat Celtic away.
Yeah.
Terrible. That was a terrible performance. The away game. But you think about it, Brendan Rodgers. I think he'll become. This will be his 19th Champions League game in charge of Celtic. That's more than any other manager in the club's history. So, but he's seeing those previous 18, he's never had a more winnable game than this.
Yeah,
because the coefficient differential, I think, is one of the biggest in terms of they're down at like 300. It's a European coefficient, and we're about 48 or 50. 50,
I think it's 50 or something.
Somewhere in that, sort of 48, 50.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
band. Yeah, because it's one of
mine. There can be no... I'm sorry, I know people say, oh, Scottie, respect them. Mm. We know all these, like a kind of normal health warnings apply, but there can be no excuses for not winning this game. Because if you don't win this game, where's your next points coming from when you look at the run? What is it, Dortmund, Atalanta, then Leipzig?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they don't look this appetising, do they?
Yeah, but if you get a good start, it gives you a platform to build on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that like with more optimism getting into it, and you made a good point earlier there about how I've never won the first game, so I've always been chasing my tail,
always
making it difficult. So on this occasion, you want to get points on the board and get a good start, and you'll move on with a bit of momentum.
But do you remember in 2012-13, a really cagey opening game against Benfica? There was hardly a chance in it. It ended 0-0, and people were saying, "Oh, that's Celtic out." If they can't win that game,
do you know what's
going on? Barcelona, they can't. You know,
they've got
Benfica away.
But I suppose that also then changes the dynamic of all the teams in it. In that,
nobody quite knows.
None of the teams that we are subsequently playing care less about our previous result. And in terms of in a group stage, how we, you know, if we beat Slovan Bratislava or draw or lose, the team that we are playing next and following that are also taking into consideration other results that have happened in the group.
That's true.
It's now...
it's so wide open.
It's completely irrelevant. When Dortmund or Atalanta play us, it's completely irrelevant what we did against them, because they're not directly competing with us. They're competing against... they might be thinking about somebody else, yeah. So actually, I suppose the other way of looking at it is you go, our last game, that's away to Villa.
That's away to Villa.
Yeah. You could have a situation where going into that last game, we are in group stages. What matters is our previous results. And so Villa giving us a beneficial result is negative to Villa because they're in the group, same group stage. You could have a situation where Villa going into that result, a draw against us helps us. But they couldn't care less about that because the draw for them helps them in terms of where they are.
Yeah. It's crafted in such a way that when you think about it, what used to happen was 32 teams get sliced in half. So 16 went directly forward. But there's only 8 in the safety zone now.
Yeah.
So there's going to be one heck of a bun fight. Because there's a lot of big clubs that won't necessarily be in the top 8. And they'll be pushing to try and get in there to get themselves straight through. And don't have this, you know what I mean? Like, who knows this playoff? And the playoff will be determined by how high up you finish. So I think it will be the next 8 will play the bottom 8.
Yeah. And I think they start, so 9th plays, whatever it is, 16th, 23rd or 24th.
24th.
And then 10th plays 23rd. And so they're going up like that.
I think it's quite smart.
Mm-hmm. It's the nearest you're getting to an actual European Super League without having Super League.
Yeah,
because you know, as I said, the point I made there about more variety is there was a couple of seasons ago there that the draw was getting made for the Champions League, and it's no Barcelona again, and no Man United again. So you become a wee bit blasé because you're getting to play the big teams.
Yeah,
and now that as I said there, that you're rather getting to play 3 teams twice, you're getting to play 8 teams once.
Yeah,
and again, in terms of variety, it's much much better, I think. For keeping the interest of the public.
I know, it's fresh. I mean, Celtic did play by Slovan Bratislava. Do you remember when?
64.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yet the older Celtic fans will tell you, in terms of the history thing, is that was one of their most impressive results, because Bratislava at that time were quite quoted in terms of European performance.
Right.
And they beat them home and away. And I always remember my dad telling me, I'm sure John Hughes scored them in Bratislava, and he said it was an afternoon kickoff. We were all buying the evening papers, as you've done in the days, and absolutely shocked that you know, we went to Czechoslovakia, as it was in the days, and actually beat them.
Right.
And they thought that was the year they thought they were going to win it. They played the MTK in the next round, won 3-0 in the first leg, and then went to Budapest in the second leg and lost 4-0, and that left a big scar on a lot of Celtic fans at that period.
Well, Jim Kennedy used to talk about it, because he worked with us at the Celtic View and all that. He said he claimed the night before at the they used to have a meal, you know, with officials came and all that. And they said that sitting beside the referee was what we now call a sex worker. That was being paid for So he claimed.
Wouldn't surprise me. You know what these communists are like, Andrew?
Can he be trusted?
It's all about party. It's not about partying.
But that's the reason why they've done it, because the big, I mean, this is the irony. The big teams initially wanted the seeding system because they didn't want to risk losing and getting knocked out of the Champions League. But after 20-odd years, 30 years of Champions League football, they're bored with it because we've been in it 13 times. Imagine if you're one of the elite teams that's in it every season and you apparently come up. I remember, it's when we played Arsenal, it was the season before we played Arsenal under Mowbray, or when we went to play them in a qualifier. Remember the BBC website did an article about how Celtic have done in Champions League, that it might look as though they don't massively achieve. But every time Celtic have progressed out of the group stage, in doing so, they have had to have beaten teams better than them.
Yes.
And the Arsenal had never beaten teams better than them in the Champions League.
That's right.
Because every time Arsenal progressed, they were a top one team, so they were beating teams. They would finish top of the group, and they would then play a team that was also seeded below them. And every time Arsenal got knocked out of the Champions League, it was the one game of the season that they played a team better than them, and they would get beat. And so that this article was saying, so actually, although people might think Celtic underachieved because they've only done one or two last 16, Celtic permanently are overachieving by beating teams better than them, and Arsenal are permanently underachieving because they never beat teams that are better than them. So these big teams have then started complaining because people were not, because they're through after three games, and their fans know it and are not turning up. So did you watch the Apple documentary about the Super League?
No,
it's fascinating. Absolutely, you must watch it, because the overriding thing I took out of that is sometime in the next 10 years there'll be a Super League.
Yes.
These guys are just going to keep going.
Yes.
They created a formula for the Super League which didn't get enough buy-in from Germany and Britain.
Yep.
Although English clubs went for it.
And then
the fans didn't. Actually, when you watch the documentary, which is written from a UEFA perspective, effectively, but it's got Real Madrid guy and the Juventus guy who were behind it. The biggest person who stopped the Super League happening in this documentary, Boris Johnson. Because Boris Johnson came, because he's just a populist.
Exactly.
So he came out seeing the way the fans were behaving, and he came out against it and stood in Parliament and said, we'll never back it. And basically what they say is, the minute that happened, we knew we were toast.
He didn't care one way or another, so he's just won the populist wave.
But the overriding thing that the elite clubs were getting, they need more money. I wrote about it in the site a couple of weeks ago, Football Elite itself. They need more money to pay the players. And the minute the players find out they've got more money, the players want more of it. So they give it to the players to keep the players, which then means they just permanently need more money and more money.
And their big thing was, Italian Germans need it to compete with English.
Well, not the Germans.
No.
The Germans were dead set against it. They were more against it.
The point I mean is because England makes so much money for the Sky TV deal, and it's such a powerful thing that they've got there, that then, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona, who've always been like the big cheese, can they really afford the wages? And the Italians, you think back when we were younger, Serie A was it. I mean, every player in world football worth their salt played in Italy and had the highest wages. And through the years, England have caught up gradually to a point that Italy can't compete with England, which means the AC Milan, Inter Milan and Juventus in particular want a Super League.
It doesn't make any sense, but the reality is that Bournemouth can pay a player. They can outwin AC Milan for a player.
Did you see there was some guy...
11,000 at Principal Ali Stadium.
There's some guy used to be involved in Scottish football. Patently, he made some statement yesterday. Patently doesn't understand that Brighton are an elite club now. He made some comment about
Brighton and Sunderland. You mentioned
one of the Glasgow teams would be a more attractive proposition to investors than Brighton. Brighton are sixth in the English Premiership, playing in the Amex Stadium.
Look at the turnover.
They are in Brighton, which is where the people with money have their main home in London, and then commute up to the Pied de Terre in London during the week. Guy's bonkers. He's living in 1984 or something. Anyway, the big thing out of that documentary is these elite clubs wanted more games where they played each other more often.
So they haven't got that.
No, but they sort of have in the group, in the new league format, because the Pot 1 teams in the group stage were never playing Pot 1 teams.
Right.
And now the Pot 1 teams are playing two other Pot 1 teams. Yeah. They're playing one at home and one away.
Technically, Real Madrid could play Bayern Munich in the first game set.
Yes. So, obviously, this new league format has been trying to take some of... Because you just watch that documentary, as I say, and think, like, so you're just going to go at it again. You're just going to keep tweeting until you get enough people to go... It was all to do with the pyramid was too small. You need to you just watch that and you think, you're just going to keep having to broaden the base of the pyramid to feed people in.
Yes.
And eventually you'll get enough clubs going.
But they've also been clever because they've thrown us a bone as well.
They
have. And as much as we're getting eight games now rather than six,
yep.
And we're also getting it after Christmas, which in order to do so previously, you had to qualify through the different stages. So we're now in that position now, whereby, particularly as a club, we'll have four home gates.
Yeah,
which is massive when you think of the you know, just apart from even taking part in it, you've got 60,000 people paying God knows how much in terms of the gate money, and then you've got everything surrounding that, your corporate stuff, and it's just such a big earner, and we're going to increase that by 25%.
Yeah, it's funny how, but for clubs like Celtic, you have to run faster and faster to just slide slowly back. You think about 1980. Like Celtic getting in the quarterfinals, yeah. By beat Partizan Tirana,
right,
and Shamrock Rovers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh no, it was Dundalk.
Dundalk. So that got you into the last eight. Now, then the last 16, you know, you had to finish second in a 14 group. Now, Celtic, in order just to reach the last 16, could have to play more games than they did to win it. Because if Celtic get one of these playoff places, they'll play 10 games in the Blue Riband tournament in Europe. They won the damn thing with 9 games.
Right. But maybe you're old enough to remember where the reason that really, in my opinion, that the Champions League came to be in the Champions League was in around about 88-89. You know how you made a good point there that in the first round, generally speaking, you would get weak opposition, and then the second round, it would get difficult. And then after the new year, you have the quarterfinals and the semi-finals when it gets really difficult. So Real Madrid were unfortunate enough to draw AC Milan at their peak when it was Hulett, Van Basten, Rijkaard, Baresi, and they get beat 5-0 in the San Siro. Absolute doon. And what happened the next year, in the identical round, in the second round, they caught them again. And apparently Real Madrid made representations to UEFA and went, we can't keep going out in the second round. We're Real Madrid. Which is the reason why the negotiations took place to bring in that initial Champions League in 1992, which was pretty... Yeah, but
it was the mythology, you know, because Rangers have the mythology about when they got to the I was going to say, when they got to UEFA Cup final in 2005, the season wasn't extended, except it was. And actually, your problem for fixtures is because you'd got a Champions League game postponed earlier in the season to give you a chance to the Champions qualifier, which you blew, and then your pitch was crap, and you had to get a whole load of cup games, and you kept drawing cup games. But the myth around the league wasn't extended, yes, it was, because it finished on a
Wednesday night.
Or was it not a Thursday night?
It could have been a Thursday, midweek.
Do you know what I had done for kind of something like that? The guy took forward to episode, you know,
right.
And he got me done.
But they did get the league extended.
What I said is that it never happened before. And so they wanted to know, Ipswich wanted to know, and said, the guy produced all these ones, 79 and all that, it was all extended. And I said, no. I said, Motherwell were supposed to be playing Kilmarnock. They could have played them 2 weeks before. I said, what I meant was it never been extended. But it was extended for teams that had no reason for it.
Yes, uh-huh.
They could have played their games 2 weeks earlier.
The whole league got extended,
exactly.
As of then.
Just for the sake.
I mean, 1979, it was the weather that did it. So
it was the weather. Yeah. So everybody had outstanding games. But there was games in 2008 that could have been played 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
But the same thing, yeah, they had the mythical semi-final. They never reached a semi-final.
They found in favour of the guy. So I had to print an attraction.
If I could send a message out to any younger fans watching this, my son's 20, right? and I would say to them, the pain that we felt for those first 9 years, whereby probably in six of those 9 years, out of five or six anyway, Rangers took part in the Champions League and watched it on the television and wanted to be part of it. And we were so far away at that point. I mean, we couldn't even we couldn't even finish third or fourth in the league in Scotland, never mind compete in the Champions League. So now, but when I look at this now and we're talking about this game on Wednesday night and we're anticipating it and it's going to be a full house, it's going to be a great atmosphere. We're in there at the top table now. You know, it's something that we really need to value and we really need to...
precious.
Yeah,
it's so precious because, it's, you know, I said today about the fact that 78 games and they've only won 19 of them. Three of them were last night dead rubbers. And we've only two wins, Champions League wins in the last day.
Is it still one away win?
And a leg.
Two away wins. And a leg. And
I forgot about
Spartak Moscow.
Yeah,
so talked about Vladimir Weiss, ex-Rangers player. His dad is the manager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's two Weisses. They've got a lot of Weisses, that team. So they're going to play 4-2-3 guys. So that's them. So we've got. So you're saying we're going to win?
Yes, I think one thing. Well, I can smell it, as they say. Get my stuff. Smell it.
See, the thing is, in the old days, that off the top of my head, when we drew Partizan Belgrade in 1989, nobody had an inkling but Partizan Belgrade were like, they didn't have a clue. 89, I'm 10 years old. 1989, I'm picking a game, random game off the top of my head. Nobody knew what formation they played, nobody knew what their players were like, nobody knew anything about them virtually. But the wonder is, I mean, Brian's looking up here and he's got his report there, and we can tell. General terms, how this team play, what their current form is, where they are in the league, who their players are. And I'm sure that if you're really keen enough and you go on YouTube, you'll be able to see highlights of the Slovakian league in terms of how this team play.
You could see
that's a huge advantage now. We didn't have that back in the days. You used to get guys like yourself in the media that would say that Billy McNeil's got a... What did you used to call it again? A dossier.
Right.
Somebody gave him a dossier and then Billy can read through it. Billy, you know, you don't get to read it, I don't get to read it, you don't get to read it. So, very often when you played these teams, it was a bit of a leap in the dark.
Well, somebody from Celtic would go and watch them once person.
Yeah.
And the game could be off.
And remember sometimes the actual manager, remember there were sometimes it would be the assistant would take the game the 2 weeks before or whatever, because the manager had travelled over and wouldn't get back in time or whatever. Or
the one always sticks to my mind, the Rangers one, John Brown was injured at the time and they drew Red Star Belgrade when Red Star had the brilliant Prosinecki Stojkovic era team. And he went over to watch them and he came back and he says to Walter Smith, well, what kind of team are they? And pardon the French here, but I'm going to say what he says. And apparently Brown says, we're fucked. Because he knew how good they were, and that actually transferred into the game because they get beat 3-0, 10-0 in Belgrade, and I think they lost the game at Ibrox as well. So you know, like
the Red Stars,
the Lille Cup final.
Do you know? I was thinking about that. I was actually thinking it was something that came up in conversation about Rangers losing the Europa League final a couple of seasons ago, and somebody was taking a piss. But in my head, I was thinking. But they were there. And it then reminded me of, I remember being at Fir Hill. We were playing Partick Thistle after they'd been knocked out by AEK Athens. And wearing a T-shirt, another early knockout.
Yeah.
And we're there struggling against Partick Thistle in the league, taking the piss out of them for being knocked out of Europe. And there's a part of you thinking, but at least they were there.
Well, you know what happened to me, actually? I went to Paris. Celtic were playing PSG the night after they lost 4-0. Was it 4-0 over in the Juventus?
Uh-huh.
And they lost 4-0 over the Juventus. And all these guys at the Celtic Sports were all saying, Juve, and I wrote this piece in the programme. I said, we're overly parochial here. I said, because at least they were there. And I started getting kind of threatening emails. The police had to get, it's really threatening.
Letters.
And it was like somebody knew my girlfriend's name, because Spears had been put in the diary about seeing us on the town and all that, and there was this vile stuff they were saying about rape and all this and stuff.
Oof.
So the police got involved, and it all came to that, because Archie did it on the, because he used to do the radios,
So this is a very different piece in the Celtic program. Pretty parochial, as I've written, I faced pretty parochialism, and he loved that.
He would love the alliteration there.
Oh, he was right up Archie Street.
What was the game then that, Tiger Tim made the announcement that at half time he says, and everybody thought he was being serious. He said, we're going to have a minute's silence, and you know, one and another going, maybe one of the old players, maybe one of the Lisbon Lions has died. And he says, minute's silence for Rangers, who the previous night had been put with Leslie. I'm sure it was Leslie Sophia. And got a burst out laughing. Everybody thought it was dead funny, and then they get sacked. The board sacked them.
Was it not a League Cup game against? I've got it in my head. There was a League Cup game against Raith Rovers.
No, Young Boys.
Was it Young Boys?
We played the next night against Young Boys when Rangers get put before it, and poor old Tiger had to work the plan.
I hate to give a kind of sour render in that. My mother had just died, right? And see, when he started saying, we're going to that was me, my first day back,
right?
That night. And I thought, oh God, they really care about me, man. Actually, I know it's like...
thought it was your mum?
Yeah, I thought they were... I thought it was a moment's silence for my mother. Oh. Like, they've got to say, Andrew Smith, Celtic View and all that. Okay, one of, and it wasn't. I was with my brother and sister. We all kind of...
Just for that couple of shots?
Like, well, yeah, because obviously you're thinking about your mother. You know, your mother's going to die suddenly. Nowhere. Just about, it's no much older than I am now, you know? It was so it really triggers me, you know, to think back on that.
Well, so that's the gist of it.
Move on.
So that's the gist of it. The other thing I wanted, so you expect us to win?
I'm always, you know me, I'm quite cautious, right? I'm cautious by nature. But what I will say is, I'll repeat it again, 13th time in it in the Champions League, they haven't played in it yet. They cannot be experienced in terms of what the atmosphere that is going to hit them, the 60,000 people, the noise. And there is something, I'll repeat it again, there is something about that bit at the beginning where the Champions League tune gets played and the kids are all waving the flag in the middle, the big circly ball thing.
Yeah.
And there is something quite emotional about that, and it reaches a crescendo because it gets louder and louder. And you know, if you're a Celtic player and this is the third consecutive season we played in it, You know that they'll be here, you know what's happening. And also as well, it's on home soil. You know, you can't ask for a bigger advantage. And again, with due respect to Slovan Bratislava as well, you're looking at the coefficient we were talking about it there in terms of the numbers. So, you know, we're not punching above our weight here. We're punching below our weight. But, and that should come across.
But on Twitter, you put on the thing about our history and... somebody came back to you, made the point. So there's two aspects. The valid point, and then I agreed with your counterpoint. So the valid point of, yes. So that goes back over 20 years. So none of those players are playing in this team, right? And I agree and accept that. But then that's what gets me thinking, we as a club have then created a mental block.
There's a collective neurosis.
Yeah, because we've changed managers, we've changed players, and we are still have a terrible record in the last 20 years of losing games against teams that we should beat. And it's always, I actually think, what's one of the things that, and I've got, this is anecdotal off the top of my head, so I've not checked any records. New manager comes in, and we have some not bad European performances. And then it's almost like that collective, it's almost like because you and your former colleagues remind everybody about how once again Celtic are shite in Europe, and it's almost as if the players go, are we? And somebody shows them the record and they go, so we are.
So
I'm not blaming the press, but I'm trying to find an explanation as to why I've created a running spreadsheet of stuff to point out.
I think it's an inferiority complex.
We keep getting knocked out. When we, in the last 20, since Seville, however many times, I've not checked it recently, how many times we've been knocked out where you can directly say we get knocked out by that team, whether it's because we finished third in a group and so the team, and it's something like two-thirds of the times that we've been knocked out of Europe, when it's a direct, it's been a team with a lesser coefficient than us that we should have beaten. So, for example, when we get knocked out by Copenhagen recently under Lennon, we should have been 2-3-0 up at half time. In Copenhagen, we should have been 2-3-0 up at half time. We were so much better than them. Second half, they come into the game,
you're coming in a home leg thinking, I mean, they came into it a bit in the second half, but we were so much better than them. And they knock us out.
Yep. Cluj.
You know, teams that you...
Maribor.
Yeah, teams that...
Malmo. They were...
That you're watching thinking, if they were in the Premier League, we would finish ahead of them in the Premier League. If we had a whole season where they were in the same, playing the same teams as us, we'd finish above them.
But you always put this down to the way that Celtic play.
Well, I think it's partly the way we play. I think
because Rangers tend to do the job in teams like that. Mm-hmm. Teams of that kind of standard.
Yeah,
I know they lost to Maribor and under McCoy's.
I think it's partly they could, you know, because it's so interestingly when last season I sent, you know, very fortunate having been on the, having done the podcast, there's some good football people, you know, that are decent level, and asked four people separately who wouldn't know that I'd asked the other one. And they all and said, how come Rangers have achieved better results in Europe in the last few seasons than we have when we are so much better than them domestically? And they all said the same thing, because they play a style of football that the Celtic fans wouldn't accept on a week-in, week-out basis. And three of the four of them said, and it's no surprise, some of Celtic's best results have been under Strachan, that the fans were whinging about his domestic style of football.
But it was eye-watering, you know, as we're talking about before. It was eye-watering.
Especially the last season, particularly.
It wasn't good to watch. The half of the first season as well. He hit some kind of stride from Maloney. Started kind of turning it on.
I always felt under Strachan, we would start a season doing not bad football, but we would win games like 3-2 and concede goals. And he would start to get criticised. And it was almost as if he was like, all right, okay, well, I'm not going to... And then we would maybe draw a game that we should have won because we were 2-0 up and we get to 2 each. And then he would go, well, I'm going to stop that happening. And then we would play this really tedious football, winning games 1-0 and 2-1 and 2-0.
Yeah, and I mean, but I mean, it's back four, and that back four, probably the most successful back four Celtic have had in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. We've still got the Champions League. It's like, you know, Telfer, like Caldwell, McManus, and Naylor. That's probably, they actually, in terms of a percentage record, they probably get...
Well, we go to Milan, and if it's not, and if it wasn't for Paolo Maldini doing his best Conor Goldson impersonations,
I know.
We might have gone through it in the last eight.
Somebody should have done Kaká and a half failing night. And
somebody should have.
Like Steve McManaman that night at the Liverpool game.
Yeah.
He gets in his stride, he goes past one, past two, shouldn't we get past third one?
No. Who was it?
I think it was Lennon in the half failing, and then he took McManus out of the game as well.
McManus,
to be fair, tried to slide about the last minute, and it was a superb goal. I mean, so, I've seen that goal pretty recently, and you need to give Kaká the credit. It was absolutely sublime what he did. But at the same time, for a point of view, for a Celtic point of view, you know, somebody could have done
but they had defended heroically until that point.
But the thing about the Rangers, the point you're making there is, part of my frustration is that with both Rodgers and Ange, is they will not change their system to play at the opposition in Europe. Now, I'm not advocating that you change it against Slovan Bratislava, because we should be good enough to beat opposition of that calibre, but by playing our normal game, right? But see, when you do go to the Bernabeu or you go to Paris Saint-Germain, then you need, in my opinion, you need to set your stall up accordingly. You don't play the same tactics in the Bernabeu as what you would against Ross County and Dingwall. And we've been doing that now for about 6 or 7 years.
I think Rodgers, I think he's the epiphany, and I think the penny's dropped, because he said something recently, and it was a lovely line, because he was asked about how he'd approach Europe. He said, you can't just throw punches all the time.
So I think there is a challenge, because the reason we are so good domestically is because we, Rodgers and Ange in particular, are excellent coaches. So the players are coached to the nth degree, so that without thinking, I know you're there and you're there and he's there, and right. So when I'm on the pitch, I can then start playing balls, because I don't even need to look right, because somebody will be there, right? But so the problem is, if you change too much for European football, you're not there. So I then under pressure of European football, I'm going to be more prone to have to make quick, instant decisions. So it's even more important that I know you're there, somebody's there, and you're there. So if I then just go...
The distances.
So if we then change the system, and I go, shit, under pressure, bang, oh, we're seeing it. Or as we saw when Aberdeen equalised because Brendan had tried to go three at the back because our defence was so crap in the cup semi-final, the three centre-halves, for the minute and a half that we got three centre-halves, they're all going, who's supposed to be where? Yeah. And they're so busy doing that that the ball just comes in and they forget about it. So they're not used. So it is a challenge. But I wouldn't be surprised. What Bernardo was really good at against Rangers in recent team was closing down the space and taking possession off them, right? Engels, apparently, didn't see it so much because it's Hearts. He's very physical. He's quite athletic and can get about the park. When you're playing lesser teams, you need people who are good at closing down the space when you've not got the ball. I wouldn't be surprised if Hatate doesn't play much Champions League football this season because he gives the ball away too much for Brendan. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was Bernardo, Engels and McGregor in the three.
See that three? That's the three I would like to see him with.
Because they're much more athletic and mobile.
You're not surprised at the weekend that it was Bernardo that got sacrificed rather than Hatate because I think general telling people thought he was the best player against Rangers.
I did.
As I said to Guy Ronnie, who sits next to me, it depends how that's dealt with. Because if the manager says, you're playing Wednesday night, this is the system of playing Wednesday night, so you're playing and so's Engels. So I need him to get a game under his belt. Yeah. If that's how it's been, you know, so we won't know until Wednesday night.
Although, if you're doing that, you think, well, let's play this three, let's have the three of them playing together for the first time.
But he doesn't want to do that against Hearts, because he doesn't need to do it against Hearts.
Yeah.
So it may well be that he's saying...
I thought he might have played Trusty even on Saturday, like just because Cameron Carr-Vickers is so important. You think if anything happened to him, you should be at him, God will, really, you know.
2 left-footers in defence.
He made a comment before the game, because I thought we were a bit sluggish. Apparently Alistair Johnson found a Celtic player with a pass in the second half. I don't remember that occasion.
I don't remember that. Remember the 69 before that, when found other people.
But and Kyogo was really wasteful, but I am sympathetic.
They've travelled halfway around the world.
Yeah. And particularly, so he mentioned that Trusty and Palmer only returned back on Friday morning or something like that.
Right.
So,
I thought he had a big travel as well.
For nothing.
You know,
that's
nothing, I don't think.
And Maeda had travelled.
He wasn't quite himself either, you think?
Yeah.
It's understandable, these guys.
And Alistair Johnson, well, he had a suspected hamstring injury, so he's maybe going to play it not full because he's wanting to play the Champions League game. So it's the majority of our team. I mean, Bernardo was playing under 21. Engels played full.
Captain scored, didn't he?
Engels came on for Belgium. So basically, that team played international
Schmeichel
football
as well.
Schmeichel was away.
Yeah.
We had a few pizzas and some beers for him. Anyway, the other thing I want to do just at the end, because I'm conscious of time, is
most conscious of me.
We are going to be doing a series of podcasts about who our best Champions League team is. Yeah. So we're going to do four podcasts. We're going to do
the podcast.
Yeah. We're going to do
your surprise, your dedication. That'd be quite a good podcast.
We're going to do four podcasts. One will be where we just discuss, and it'll be different people speaking. We're just going to discuss the goalkeepers and defenders. Then another podcast where it'll be just the midfielders. Then another podcast where it'll be just the strikers. And then I'm going to get our subscribers to vote for our best Champions League 11 out of everybody who's played at least three Champions League games for Celtic.
I think what we should make the point is that it's not necessarily the best 11 players, because you'd almost pick an ill team, wouldn't you? I think people should be mindful of the impact that people have made in the Champions League. For instance, if I may be so bold,
yes,
you cannot have Georgios Samaras in your best ever Celtic.
You've read my mind. It was the first person that came to mind there when you said that.
But he wasn't necessarily. You wouldn't put him in your best 11.
But he had that wee burst.
He had something. Yeah.
And for me, he was a perfect. He was brilliant at, if we needed an out ball, we could play it, and he would either run with it, or the thing he was even better at was playing it and getting fouled at the halfway line, or just after the halfway line, so that he bought the foul.
He would take it in his chest, wouldn't he?
Get the foul.
Wait for the guy to come in.
So that we've been sitting in for 10 minutes, peeing our pants, and just move us 20, 30 yards up the pitch. And it's, we were talking just before the podcast, it also then, the other thing is, Martin O'Neill plays 3-5-2. Strachan plays 4-4-2. I then thought, what we've really got to do is say to everybody listening, it will be based on playing the system that the current manager plays. So the current manager plays effectively 4-3-3, right? So also when you're looking, because each person who's voting is picking it with a different system and set up in mind.
Yeah.
So the simplest thing is they've got to fit in the current system. Mm-hmm. If they were play, if that player was playing today in 4-3-3. So for example, you might love Sutton, but how could Sutton fit into the current 4-3-3 setup?
Unless you play him as a spear point up front.
Which means no Henrik. Or you play Henrik wide left or wide right to fit into that system.
Never play out.
No.
But we, so the other thing that's important for people listening is we will then, we'll then have a final podcast, because what we will do is take those votes. Who's the goalkeeper? Who's the back? Who's the four defenders? So who's, we're going to have, who's the most voted for left back? Who's the most voted for right back? And then who are the two most voted for centre halves? Then who are the three most voted for midfielders? Then who are the three players that
who
we can...
Who plays with Henrik?
Who can fit into...
Who plays with Henrik?
Who can play into the... And we might... So you could have a situation where if people do vote for Sutton, Sutton ends up being a midfielder.
Sutton's...
He did play in midfield a couple of times for Martin.
But Sutton is also Celtic's top scorer in Champions.
Well, I was just going to very quickly, noticing the time, for everybody listening, you may or may, you will not have heard this yet, but there's going to be a Peter Grant podcast. And that's starting recording in 9 minutes. So, so Scott Brown is our leading, Champions League player, but he never scored in the Champions League. James Forrest, next.
Half of his appearances off the bench, I noticed.
Well, yeah. So, yeah. So quite a lot of his are off the bench. Then it's so it's Brown, Forrest, then Neil Lennon. 26 games, 26 starts, not a single bench from him. Lustig, I was surprised that Lustig was fourth. 25 games, 25 starts.
There's a really surprising one coming a couple down.
Stephen McManus, 23, with 22 starts and one sub. Arthur Boric, Aidan McGeady, Baldy, Georgios Samanas, 16 starts, 2 subs, 4 goals.
So we know that Larsson won.
Larsson only played 2 campaigns.
He won 5, right? He won 5 because they only won 5 over that time. But I think it might be Steve McManus has won more champions.
Which does become difficult. I mean, you mentioned Lee Naylor. 18 games, 18 starts, Lee Naylor.
What about Caldwell? You mentioned
that? Caldwell, 18 games, 18 starts. Petrov, 18 games, 17 starts. I always remember going to watch Anderlecht away.
Yeah.
And they go down to 10 men. And we lose. And one of the players I was most raging at was... I was raging at our experienced players was Stylian Petrov, who didn't turn up.
Yeah, remember Rosenberg? They didn't turn
around.
That was it. That one in Rosenberg. That was a cold place. That was.
Oh, yeah.
Callum McGregor, 17 games, 13 starts. So you get Callum McGregor. Chris. Chris Sutton.
It's hard to say great Champions League performance. You can talk about great moments. We know. Yeah. You can talk about like the fact that we know that McManus at least has played in 7 Champions League wins, mm-hmm. as well as those 2 games against the 180 minutes for AC Milan to bring them down in the.
Well, the whole thing about McGregor, this is his opportunity to make his mark. You know, he's got 8 games. Hopefully, if he stays fit, and you know, we might be sitting here in a few months' time, thinking differently if he has a good campaign.
So Charlie Mulgrew, I mean, we could then decide that Charlie Mulgrew plays midfield, centre-half or left-back. So you talked about Henrik Larsson, 12 goals, 12 starts. Sorry, 12 games, 12 starts, 4 goals.
Yeah. One of them came that night, that dead rubber against... Two of Sutton's came the dead rubber against Juventus.
Moussa Dembele, 10 games, 4 goals in the Champions League.
Wow.
Kenny Miller, 8 goals, 3 games, 3 goals. Kenny Miller, five starts, 3 subs.
Arguably, that was Celtic's best performance in the Champions League because you absolutely slaughtered Benfica. Yeah. You know, sometimes you win and you win by a goal and you scrape it, but that was convincing.
Between Benfica and the Lyon, the 24 pass goal, remember?
Yeah.
Liam Miller was, except God rest his soul. But
Thompson missed a penalty that night. You forget that.
Alan Thompson scored for Champions League goal.
He was a big occasion player. Thompson turned up again. So
Palmer, 5 games, 2 goals.
How unlucky was he last season? Was it the...
Jota, 4 games, 2 goals.
Mm.
Do you know what's really surprised me? Bo Richter, 4 games. Bo Richter, 2 starts and 2 subs. That was in the catastrophic Champions League campaign.
All right. Do you know who had an impact and he couldn't be bothered being here? Like, if he still managed to win back in Champions League, Jarosz.
Yeah.
He had a really good Champions
League. What a goal he scored that at Shakhtar Donetsk. Yeah. Stunning goal. But it goes to show how that really annoys me about Jarosz, because we all knew what he had in him.
Yes.
But we didn't see enough of it for whatever reason. Whether he thought he was above Scottish football and he just couldn't be bothered. But then
I mean, how
Thomas Gravesen as well fits into that brand.
How amazing to think that was the summer. Mm-hmm. I think Celtic signed players from Chelsea, Manchester United, mm-hmm. and Real Madrid.
But that always.
The day by days of the blue chip signings.
But that also.
And they didn't.
But it also summarised the difference in where we are now to then, in that Jiří Jarosík, a player like him, back then, had the option, sort of a tier 2 level player, mm-hmm. had the option of being a guy who's on the bench at Man United and plays some games, and for the same salary, can play first team football every week for Celtic.
Yeah.
He picks first team football every week for Celtic. Now that guy who's on the bench at Man United is 1 million miles from our wage bill. In fact, the guy who's struggling to get on the bench at Man United is still 1 million miles from our wage bill. We're at tier...
And a 17-year-old might be a million.
We're at tier 4 level of player, whereas back then it was tier 1 is at Man United, Chelsea, whatever. Tier 2 is on the bench there, but is on 25 grand a week, and we can afford
the best we can get for
start.
Any kind of guys knows a loan deal for a year.
Yeah.
So...
Change.
Yes. So... Taking that into account, that's what we're looking to achieve. So we're going to do 4 podcasts, defence and goalkeepers. So we've mentioned Fraser Foster, Arthur Boric, Craig, I can't remember. Did Craig Gordon? Craig Gordon, yeah. Arthur Boric, Fraser Foster, Joe Hart. Right? Those are the Champions League goalkeepers for people to choose from.
Yes.
Then defenders, left back, right back, and 2 centre-halves for people to choose from. And we'll do a podcast about them. And then we'll do a podcast about the midfielders, do a podcast. And then when all the votes are in, and I'll put on the website when people vote by, when all the votes are in, we will then do a podcast unveiling what the team is, and we'll have had to fashion it into a formation.
And has everybody got to vote for their own 11?
Yeah, just vote for your own 11. Just put in your 11. So put your 4-3-3 system and pick your players. And you're right, pick them on their Champions League performances. So... Paul Hartley could get in the team.
Yeah.
Because in the Champions League, they deliver.
I thought that Caldwell and McManus were incredibly limited, but I can't argue. As I say, I think I'd need to look it up, but I think McManus might watch
it. Did you see the thing I thought the other day about Caldwell, when I called him a cult hero? Cult hero, right? Yeah. And people don't get what a cult hero means.
Yes.
Yeah, guys were saying, he was garbage, he was rotten. I'm saying, no. The whole thing about a cult hero is, it could be Shuggy Edmondson, it could be Anton Rogan, it could be, you know, like, guys who weren't necessarily the best players, but for some reason, a section of the sports take them to their heart.
Yes.
And that was the thing with Caldwell. People would chant, he'd.
That's right.
That was a term of affection because they were responding to his displays. And everybody knew in some games he played well, some games he was pretty poor. But the whole thing is, He wasn't what I would term a cult hero amongst the supporter, an element of the supporters. Maybe not everybody,
no,
an element
right.
of the supporters. And I think
anyway,
maybe
we need to go
well.
Because in 30 seconds Peter Grant will be on. But in a few weeks for the listeners. Anyway, enough of us. We're going to beat Slovan Bratislava, move on to the next stage of the Champions League. And with that, I'll say Andrew and St. Anthony, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
get your 1 month free trial at sky.com.